And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the Hurling Show. We're a man down today. Conal couldn't make it today. So there's three of us here, myself and Mike here in studio. And Damien, you have your chance to shine on your own as the solo pundit.
I have, Colm, yeah, that's it. I have a lot of work to do today now, you know. Look, you're paying me well. I enjoy it, so I do, and you're looking after me very well, so I suppose it's the least I can do. But so I hope I'm able to justify myself, but I was never an individual, so I prefer to be on the team. So it's a pity Colin in there, but look, the show will stay going on without him.
The show will stay going on.
I'm shocked. Do I not count as a pundit? Like, you know.
You see, this is the problem. Neither me or you are pundits, so we're bluffers and we've only one expert here. So this is the way. There's got to be a new dynamic to the show.
Well, you're the bosses.
Yeah, I have a couple of round three Wexford underage, you know, county medals that would bear to disagree with you.
Yeah, and it's funny enough, Mikey, that you have mentioned them before. That's something you're very proud of in your career. I've noticed this. So I want to read out a tweet to you here and get your reaction to it. It's from Anthony Daly, who's arguably the most respected man in hurling. I don't think I'm going overboard in saying that. He could easily be. And he says, surely a chronic imbalance in the July-August 2018 championship. 19 football matches and 5 games of hurling. How are we going to show off our sport fairly? Might as well call it the GFA. So I presume he means Gaelic Football Association. You know, there is that idea of the Super 8 now in 2018. We've covered it an awful lot on the football show. We've covered it maybe bloody too much on the football show, there's an argument. But we haven't talked about it in the context of hurling enough, Damien. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts on it are. Do you think...
The big problem with this column is that not every county plays hurling, you know. And when I say not every county plays hurling, it's not every county plays hurling at the very top level. You know, every county is competing for the Sam Maguire, and not every county is competing for the Liam McCarthy. And I can see where Anthony is coming from. Like, the imbalance of how many hurling matches there is to football matches is unbelievable. I didn't actually realise that stat, right? But that is the basically where it comes down to. It's the top tier teams that are waiting for games in hurling. So I always say there should be a lot more hurling matches, and maybe they should try to compact their championship a lot more, because I often see that the club players really suffering in the hurling circles anyway. But that's an unbelievable stat, and I didn't realise it, but that happens every year. I find there's always so many meaningless football matches, round robins and round robin one and round robin two going into the qualifiers than there in hurling matches. But that's the big problem. Not every county play hurling at the very top level, and there's always a football team, you know, because it's just finally it's easier to play football, you know. But it's always down to winning the All-Ireland in football. You've only realistically your 6 teams every year.
Yeah, Mikey, we talked about this before, that, you know, the football, right, there might be only 5 teams in the shake-up for the All-Ireland football, but there's 20 teams that could realistically give you a good game and that might be interesting to talk about. In hurling, we probably have 9 strong teams, you know, and that's with Wexford after coming on board to make that 9. Usually it had been 8 until Davy went down there. So, like, in the hurling, it's very difficult to give them those extra games, but it's not impossible. And my argument always with the hurling is, who is the voice campaigning for this hurling championship restructure? You hear it in the football so much, and you could count 10 football pundits who strongly argued this for the last 5 years. You don't hear it in hurling.
There's a lot of contentment about hurling, in particular the championship. Like, how much mythology is there around the Munster Hurling Championship, which is a tournament that features 4 games a year? It's 4 games. It's 1 quarterfinal, 2 semi-finals, and a final. And you would think you're talking about one of the most skillfully created and devised tournaments in the world here. It's 5 hurling teams playing, you know, these matches, and it's I don't know. Then the Leinster Championship obviously is skewed the other way in that, you know, you've got realistically 4 counties. If you're going to put Wexford in there, you've got 4 counties who can win a championship that features a round robin in May. You know, if you were inclined to be angry like football folk, you would look at a hurling championship and say, this is ridiculous. We've got this one championship of five or six teams which is completely and utterly mythologized, and on the other side of the country we've got this like bloated championship with round robins, which is effectively shared by Kilkenny and this county Galway, who aren't even from the province. The hurling championship's a basket case, and you would not start with the provincial championship as a basis for the hurling championship.
Yeah. That's,
whatever about the football one, there's some sense in it because there's a good spread of strong counties, but the hurling one, it just, the provincial championship's just almost, it makes it just nonsensical from the get-go.
Yeah, Damien, why is there not as much opposition to the hurling championship from pundits? You see them on the Sunday game, and it's probably a criticism I've had of them, is that they're endlessly positive about hurling. Like, I mean, there's never a negative kind of narrative formed after games or around the championship. It's always like, what a brilliant year, maybe hurling in a weird way are getting what they deserve here because there's not any opposition being put up.
Yeah, well, last year it was a very, very poor championship until the quarter final. Like, I remember, like, last year Kilkenny beat Galway in the Leinster Championship, and you know they had a relatively easy win. Then you had Tipperary, who absolutely walked all over Waterford. So really, the championship only kicked off last year in hurling at semi-final stages. So all of a sudden it was a case that with no hurling, there's no hurling championship. And next thing, we got two or three really good games, and hurling is back where it is. You know, it all starts from the grassroots, as we all say. But the big issue is that there's some counties that don't play hurling at the top level, you know. But you're just saying, you know, that there's never any noise about what's going to happen in the hurling championship. Like, the only ever thing that you hear most years, like, for example, the big topic of Galway going into Munster this year.
Yeah.
You know, and Galway pulling out of Leinster because of fixtures and home venues and all this sort of stuff. A couple of years ago, it was a case of Galway going into Leinster. Then there was the only other debate was scrap the provincial championships. Like, as long as I'm watching hurling and playing hurling, lads, and maybe you'll disagree with me, but I can never see a championship without provincial. Like, this thing of trying to scrap Leinster and scrap the Munster championship, this will never happen. It will never ever happen. And these are the only debates that come into what we call the hurling championship, right? But in the football championship, they're now talking about super rates, and they're now talking about the top 10 tiers, then another championship for the next 10. As you said, Colin, there's so many debates and topics and conversation regarding the football championship. The hurling one never seems to get any, but all it has been the last couple of years was Galway going into Munster, scrapping the provincial championships, having an open draw. That's it.
Yeah, and I have some sympathy on the hurling pundits in a way, Mikey, in that, in general, I know Damien's completely right. Last year wasn't a great championship, and the semi-finals and the final saved it. But in general, the top teams play each other a lot more in the hurling, so they're kind of happy with their lot, and
have to play each other because that's all there is.
So that nine kind of play around, and then you get a back door, and usually when the Laois and the Offalys get beaten in the back door, you head towards quarters, and you've got the eight of the top nine teams in it. So there's not the same clamour. I can kind of understand why, but, like, I mean, you still can always make it better. And I talked to Richie Hogan in my previous job maybe 2 years ago, and he was saying the idea that I only play four games to win an All-Ireland, he says, it's disgraceful. It's lasted over 3 months and I play four games in 3 months. There's too many gaps. There's not enough hurling, which I want to play. But you never hear pundits picking up on that. Like,
no.
It was a great interview and a real strong opinion from the best player in the country. And there's no pundits, you know, going, here, listen to this man.
Absolutely, because people, you get, as Damien says, you get one good 70 minutes and everyone says, Jesus, hurling's the best game in the world. You talk about the quarterfinals, you said eight teams. There's six teams at the quarterfinal stages of the hurling championship because it's that messed up and imbalanced that you've got two teams straight through to semi-finals and you got four teams in the quarterfinals. And it just shows the whole thing's a basket case. And if, you know, I know the AB championship idea was thrown out in football and it's, you know, we might get it at some stage, but the hurling championship is almost crying out to be something like that, to almost be a two layers, you know, two tiers of 12 or however many. Have a top tier of 12 and then work out how the bottom one goes and almost play it off as a league.
Yeah, maybe it's just going to, the conversation's going to have to open up now amongst the hurling community, because like that, I know, Mikey, we talked when we initially heard it and went, hurling's in a good place, football isn't, hurling's still going to be huge games, but like when you actually break it down, 19 football games, and that July are going to be glamour football games, like it's very hard to argue that hurling isn't going to be marginalised.
Yeah, and then you even look at the quarterfinals in the hurling, and like last year Wexford and Waterford wasn't a game, you know, that was very lopsided there. You'd hope it would be a bit closer this year, but as Damien said, you're talking about the semi-final stages before you get these games that leave everybody a year after talking about, Jesus, wasn't 2016 championship a cracker, wasn't, you know, that final, that was amazing.
Whereas that everybody that happens in football too, because you get great set like Kerry and Mayo drawing that semi-final and then the replay Limerick and shit that went down before and Dublin or Donegal beating Dublin then in semi-final, suddenly it looks like what a brilliant year, and I'm like, no, it wasn't a brilliant year, you know, but that's the impression
everybody remembers. The two Kilkenny Waterford games, and they remember the final, you know, they remember Tipperary's performance in the final, but then, you know, they don't remember the fact that Cork were embarrassingly bad. The Munster final was a washout in Limerick. It was just a depressing game of hurling between Tipperary and Waterford, and you've got, you know, just disappointing mismatches all over the place. But then you get three semi-finals, one drawn, they're crackers, and the final wasn't a close game, but it was a phenomenal performance from one team, and everyone's like, Jesus, hurling's brilliant.
Yeah, but here's a question, Damien. Is there an arrogance amongst the hurling community, as in, when we talk about the black card in football, and there was a few mentions of it coming into hurling, and the next minute you hear, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with our game, there's no need for that. And then last weekend we have six penalties because players are just fouling fellas because the penalty's so hard to save, and there's always the talk, is the best game on earth after a good game, and you know, is there a kind of a reluctance to maybe change things, and that's why we're not campaigning for a new championship in hurling?
You could be right, but I don't like, just go on the black card, I don't like this black card rule, because the first thing I'd say about it, I don't think the referees understand it fully, and it's not implemented properly. There's some players that get a yellow card, other players get a black card. Other player, so I don't know if it's interpreted properly by some referees, and do other referees understand it? So, number one, I hate this black card. I think it's a cop-out. You know, the best advantage for the player is that he'll get the yellow card, as opposed to getting the black card, and then he has to leave the pitch. But, I find in hurling, you're right, they don't like making changes, and I think you're 100% right. As little changes as possible in the hurling championship, where in football they're continuously trying to change it and mix it up and everything, but in hurling it's a disputable game, they don't want to touch it. You know, even if there was a rule that the old school hurling people, if they could stop the short puck out and the hand passing, they would.
Yeah, well, that's true. Lads, I want to move on to a game at the weekend that's interesting. Now, I know Limerick are very strong favourites, but there's two teams we haven't talked about before. And I want to start off with Offaly. And we had Eamon Kelly, who's now the current Laois manager, on the show 2 weeks ago. And here's what he thought about Offaly.
It's not that long ago. 98 isn't that long ago, where people remember winning All-Ireland, you know. So the expectation to do that, you know, is still fresh in the minds, but you have to look at what happens underage. I think, you know, you reap what you sow. They mightn't have had as much success coming since in the last 10 years. Now they certainly are doing that again. So I've just going to be a huge grow. Like Kevin Ryan did say that when he said that if you asked 50 players in Waterford, 50 would come in, and you asked 50 players in Offaly, 30 come in. So that's part of it. That's, you know, that's difficult when you don't have all the best players looking to play for the county. Why? And understand on that, I wouldn't even get into it. Do you know what I mean? Or I don't know what's the reason behind that.
Yeah, that's interesting, Damien, because, like, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt there's unrealistic expectations amongst the Offaly public and some of the ex-players, you know, because they have won an All-Ireland so recently. And it's like, when I start looking at Offaly now, I always think that they need to accept where they are here, and, like, they get hammered by Galway. Right, you get hammered by Galway because that's the level that you're at now, and it's a matter of just sucking that up.
Well, being honest with you, Offaly hurling has come back a lot. There's no point saying it hasn't, which is disappointing, you know. And you know, I used to love watching Offaly when I was younger, when they won the All-Irelands. Like, Offaly were always a great team to watch, and great supporters, and they had great players over the years. So they had, you know, but Offaly hurling has gone back an awful lot. And even like you're saying there, Galway Hammer and Offaly, there was, when I was playing against Offaly, Offaly never feared Galway, and Offaly always gave Galway a real good game, but tough, hard, manly stuff, fair, but it was always a great game. And even like Joe Dooley was the manager, you know, since he has gone, right, and the Offaly, they've just been deteriorating, you know. And like you have certain players there, you know, Shane Dooley, you often just wonder, like a stalwart there, you have Joe Brady, you say to yourself sometimes, how did they stay going back, you know? And like Offaly hurling has gone back so much, and I don't know where it's going. They have unrealistic expectations down there. They're not anywhere close to the chasing pack. Watford, they're no closer to winning the Leinster Championship. Absolutely not. A realistic thing for Offaly would be if they could beat Wexford in Leinster Championship hurling every year. You know, but Offaly are gone way back.
You can understand their unrealistic expectations to an extent. Even just this week, I was watching TG Cahir, and there was Leigh Cregale, and it was Michael Deignan, and like, you know, it's not that long ago that
the
team with Whelans and Troys and Regans and Dooleys were like destroying everyone around them, and they were playing just like, they obviously were highlighting Michael Deignan, but like he scored 2 or 3 points in that All Ireland final that were just against Clare, that were just out of this world, and they were just such an exciting team. And as Damien says, their fans, they were like, Wexford used to be up against them nearly every year in the Leinster Championship. They were a great crack, and you always preferred playing them than Kilkenny, because they never felt that they were better than you or on a similar level. And I remember when I went to college in Limerick, I became friendly with Brian Carroll. I remember he was just starting out with Offaly, and we were thinking, Jesus, you know, it's nice to have an inter-county hurler for a friend, you know, a bit of glamour. And then you're looking at it, he retired last year, and you're thinking, Jesus, Brian Carroll was playing for Offaly hurlers for an awful long time, and there was, you know, that was, it was almost like a thankless task. He was carrying a lot of it on his own shoulders. Like when you first met Brian, it was like, oh Jesus, he's an Offaly hurler, that's fantastic. And then by the end of it, you're like, he did well to stick out being an Offaly hurler for so long. It's like they've kind of been transformed from this kind of glamorous bunch of psychopaths into like this team that are kind of a bit woebegone, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, and he was in the wrong era, but now the perception is out there of Offaly hurling, and like I'm just trying to make the point that every year there seems to be the same debate about what's wrong with Offaly hurling. That debate's been done. We know now that they're not anywhere near the top table, and everyone agrees
the long and short of the column is they don't have the players.
Yeah, they don't have the players anymore. And you can blame whoever you want. You know, there was an Offaly hurling pathway report a couple of years ago that the county board sat on and didn't really do anything about it. So the blame game has been done. This is where they're at. But what I don't like about the Offaly squad is the perception there that there's lads not coming into training. We heard Eamon Kelly saying it there in the audio, and he was only saying it because the new manager Kevin Ryan said it after the first loss to Galway. And it's like, that's an unfair perception of any county team. I don't think a county team at a senior inter-county level are going around lazy and not showing up. And the idea is that the Offaly team now are uncommitted and the fella's not committing. And Kevin Ryan used the example of saying we'd have 50 lads in the morning playing with Waterford, and in Offaly we struggle to get 30. But like, from my information, you know, Offaly have everybody there except for Conor Mahon, who's getting married soon, and Colin Egan, who was last year's captain. He's expecting a child with his girlfriend, so they're two of the more high profile fellas that haven't gone in. I'd say Colin Egan could end up going in later in the year. But like, I mean, from my information, there's a lot of fellas in Offaly hurling who haven't got a phone call to go in. So like, when you hear the manager complaining about not being able to get 30 in, but then you have hurlers around the county who haven't even got the call to go in. Like, I mean, it's an easy kind of stick to beat Offaly with.
It's a luxury they don't have either, isn't it?
Well, they only have 12 senior clubs. So like, I mean, you're not comparing like with like when you compare it with Waterford, Damien, and that they have 50. But I just think that Offaly need to shake off this impression that their ability is good enough if they just committed. I think they need to figure out or realise that, hang on a second, these fellas are committed, but they're just nowhere near the standard. They're at a level like Laois now, who are also a really committed squad. They're training hard, but they're rebuilding.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I would say one thing on that, Colin. If there's mixed messaging coming, saying that managers are going out there saying that players won't come in for the squad, and players aren't committed and players, he can barely get 30 players. And for example, you've got your information from hurling circles in Offaly saying that there's certain players that haven't been called in and they should be called in to make up, you know, numbers. Well, then I think that's the first thing that needs to be sorted. Is like, where's the mixed messaging coming from? Is the players won't come in, or they're not being asked in, or is it just a cop out from the management trying to cover themselves,
yeah,
saying that, well, look, we're having a very poor season because we don't have the best hurlers in Offaly in here training, and furthermore, they won't come in because they have no interest in hurling for the Offaly senior hurling team, which will be an honour, should be the pride of place putting on the Offaly jersey. So I'd be honest with you, it should be nearly a name and shame. That's the first thing. So, like, there's mixed messaging coming there that you're being told that they don't have the strongest players on the panel. Some lads won't come in. And then when your findings, your whoever's telling you this information, that certain players haven't been caught. So, like, first thing is that they should have the strongest players hurling for Offaly, right, playing at their disposal. That's number one, and everyone throwing the shoulder to wheel and putting it in. But Offaly hurling at this present moment is dying.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and they're trying to.
There was a stage, Colin, that Offaly football was way stronger than the hurling, and that was never. Like, that was that, you know. So it's disappointing. I feel sorry for a lot of the Offaly hurlers. You know, I know a few of them. You know, and they're good lads and they're committed. And I wouldn't say it's an argument about their commitment there. But if you're being told that some of the best players aren't going into the squad because they haven't been asked, like, it's mixed messaging. So it's something that needs to be sorted out with the best players to get their disposal and try to row in behind everyone.
Yeah, here's another quick one for you before we move on from Offaly. Is Kevin Ryan, obviously the manager, Paul Flynn is in as a trainer with him. Paul, like, is an incredibly clever hurling man, but he didn't have any Offaly based selectors before Christmas. When he came in first, he had all his management team outside the county. Like, I mean, how can they possibly know enough lads to ring when they're not immersed in Offaly? Now, he has them now, but initially, you know, when he started calling in the squad and stuff, he didn't have any Offaly based selectors, which I thought was a weird one.
The answer to that question, Colin, is he couldn't have known.
No.
The answer to the question is he couldn't have, and how could he? How could, if he didn't have any Offaly based selector, how could he have known who was hurling extremely well on the club circuit scene? The up and coming young lads, the young lads that's a bit raw but could become something with a bit of coaching and a bit of development. This young lad that might be going well and another 2 years' time, he could become something. Like, the argument is, how could he have known who was hurling well, right? But that goes back to the county board. Shouldn't have happened. He should have got the job, fair play to him for wanting to take over the Offaly job, but it definitely should have been that you must have at least a minimum of one Offaly based selector that knows Offaly club hurling inside out.
Now,
you know, and that goes to club games.
Davy Fitzgerald does have Keith Roster, but a couple of weeks ago we were talking about what he's done down in Wexford, and we were saying how it is useful as an outside manager to come in with fresh eyes and not be tied to any politics or any preconceptions about a certain club or a certain player. So there are advantages to it, but I think it's a bit extreme to have no outside help.
None, yeah.
No outside help is difficult, but I can see...
Or no inside help, sorry,
but himself, Ryan and Paul Flynn, if they're going to enough games, they might identify people that others might overlook because of a certain performance at an underage level or some kind of slight against a certain club. So there are advantages to being outsiders, but I think without a guide, you're going to be struggling and making a lot of work for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Quickly on Limerick,
Mikey,
lads.
The only games, Mikey, he could be going to is games at the moment.
Mm.
If he was trying to pick up any hurlers. And what good games of hurling are out there at this present moment in club circuits? Right, club circuit scene where you're out in bad pitches that you want to pick up. We're speaking about last year's championship, that maybe there was a couple of lads that hurled extremely well club championships. How would you found out the names of them players without having an Offaly based selector on board to give them a hand?
Yeah, you'd end up getting advice from a county board member or something that you might not be able to trust, so it doesn't make sense.
That'd be great advice.
Well, in a lot of county boards. That's quickly on Limerick, because obviously they have a new manager, John Kiley, and he gave 10 debutants their chance against Wexford, which is a huge number, and they weren't beaten by that much against Wexford. Shane Dowling's on his way back to full fitness, an interesting one, and they have Kinnerk, that was with Clare, and massively rated coach. much. They've underage success. They always have underage success. That doesn't mean anything in Limerick, really. But, like, I mean, a very obvious one to me is Declan Hannan. Is this just a new experiment of him centre-back this year?
I haven't seen it before, but, we how often have we spoken about the strength of Tipperary's half-back line? When you look at it on papers, Colin Ryan, who's one of the stars of the under-21s, Seamus Hickey and Declan Hannan, you're looking at a very strong three.
Good half-back line, yeah.
It's a really, really strong half-back line, but are you biting off your nose to spite your face by taking Declan Hannan out of the forwards? I suppose it is a balancing act, and they do. Kylie is working off a finite resources there, but to me, Hannan was, he offers so much in the forwards. He'd want to be an exceptional centre half back.
Yeah, is centre half back the most important position on a hurling field, Damien?
Yeah, centre back is a very important. A good centre back is able to read the play. He can become another sweeper. He organises everything, Colm. He organises his midfielders to come back to give extra cover. Also organises his, midfielders cover back to mark number 11, which gives him the opportunity to slip back behind the half back line to give options to the full back line coming out. But it is a vital position. Like, you think of all the centre backs out there, top centre backs. They're all great players. But just on Declan Hannan, right? Just when we're speaking of him. I have to say, I'd be a little bit disappointed in Declan Hannan. Declan Hannan is an up-and-coming hurler in Limerick. I think they haven't got the best out of him. I don't know. I think that's why they've tried him at centre-back. I think they're trying to give him maybe a new lease of life, maybe trying to get another notch out of his performance. I think he's been disappointing, being honest. I think there's more in him. You're speaking there, Mikey, about a strong half-back line. You have Seamus Hickey as well there at wing-back, a former All-Star. I think he as well needs up his performance again for Limerick. He's an awful lot of scores are coming off him as well in the last couple of championships. And last year, for a finish, he couldn't make the team. Limerick need to up it big time. So do a lot of their players need to up it big time. We go on about management, the whole thing, TJ Ryan was their manager last year, and he did a good job too. But the players in Limerick need to take a good look at themselves. So do, and a couple of their big name players, their leaders, need to up it a couple of notches.
Yeah,
and they really do. What did you tell me the last time, Colin? Was it 6 years? Is it 6 years in division? We'll say 1B.
Yeah, they're in there. They're stranded in there. Yeah, they've been in there a while now.
I can't, it shouldn't be happening. It shouldn't be happening with that team. And I know it's a young team, and they'll tell you they're in transition. But some of their bigger players and their bigger name players need to up it a notch big time.
Yeah, is Seamus Hickey suffering from being thrown around in different positions? Because he was playing that wing forward role there for a while, and he was such a specialist man marker, and now he's a wing forward drifting back, then he's a corner back, and then he's a wing back, and it's almost like he's forgotten what he's good at.
Colm, a corner back, wing back, I'm sorry, it's much of a muchness,
Right.
You should be able to play both. And like in football, it might be a little bit different. You're going up and down the field. But it'd be different if you're asked to play fullback. That's a completely different role. But cornerback, wingback, they're very, very similar. A good hurler would be able to play in either position. I just think sometimes his performances don't add up to the profile of his name at times. And as I just said, I said it's about the Cork lads. There's a couple of big names in the Cork setup that need to up it as well, but there's a couple of the Limerick boys that need to up it for Limerick hurling. Simple as that. And man up to it.
You sound like you're not too enamoured with Limerick hurling. It sounds like they frustrate the life out of you there.
Oh, they will. I tell you, I'll give you an example. Last year, Dinny Cahill was the trainer of the coach of Limerick hurling last year, and Dinny trained us to win two Club All-Irelands, one of the best hurling stick coaches, trainers that I've, one of them up there, Sean Tracy would be another one, right? But when I heard he took over Limerick, I said, oh, Limerick are going to be good this year now, and they're going to be flashy, and they're going to be, their ball work and their stick work is going to be absolutely perfect, and I could only imagine the way that he trained them, but I didn't see anything different. They do frustrate me. Yeah, the Munster Championship has a lot of potential teams that could make a huge difference, but just a couple of their senior players have disappointed me. It's, you know, in the last couple of years.
It's down to their potential, isn't it? It's because you do know that there's talent there. You talk about Declan Hannan, you're annoyed by Declan Hannan, not because he's not up to it, but because you've seen him do it, and it's just that he doesn't do it often enough.
Yeah, you know there's more in him.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's the most frustrating thing about any player. Like, I mean, that would drive anybody mad. Right, lads, we've gone way over time here. Next up, we're going to talk to Mary Eyes, successful Fitzgibbon Cup winning manager Jamie Wall.
After the match with with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday, you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said it yesterday on the Marty squad. Says yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked yesterday in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it, it's over the ball.
Move away from the messing there, lads, right? We have a serious show to do here, right?
Alright, the newest manager to hit the scene in hurling is Jamie Wall after he led Mary Eye to Fitzgibbon Cup success at the weekend, and he joins us now on the line. Jamie, welcome to the show. Hope your voice is up to an interview after the week I'm sure you've had.
Thanks, Cullum. Yeah, it's just about holding up now, but we're getting there.
How did you get on all week? Like I said, the celebrations were great.
They were, yeah, in fairness. Look, Saturday night, look, we were probably a small bit late getting down, obviously, you know, when lads get club and all the stops and stuff, but I think Saturday was a late one, and then Sunday was an early one for a lot of them. So we've kind of joined them then a bit small bit later, but the celebrations have carried on, I suppose, for the lads. It's, you know, they're college students, a lot of them, so they have the luxury of celebrating that bit longer than the rest of us.
Yeah.
Maybe have to get back into the real world.
That's the thing, Sigerson Cup success, I had one in 99, and it's like you do the week after without any guilt about work or without ringing anybody. It's just completely guilt-free celebrations. You had a reception down there today as well. Did you some sort of formal event, was it?
The college put on just a homecoming kind of for the team there in front of there's a nice actual meeting area in Mary Eye in the new building now, and it's in the Tara building where there's kind of a big set of steps there that kind of looks, anyone who's familiar with the place, you know, they kind of look down almost like a stand down onto the kind of to the bottom. So the lads, they were just, in fairness, you know, a few, the acting president of the college and a few people, kind of a gang of students in between their lectures, kind of came down just to congratulate the lads and have a kind of small bit of a hello kind of for them, and just to bring the cup in home, I suppose, to the college. I suppose the fact that, you know, yourself, like, it's hard to organise something like that in a college because everyone's on different timetables, so it was nice just to get that kind of acknowledgement there for the lads, you know, and stuff. So that was a nice little event, you know, and it was only 15-20 minutes, so people were able to get back to the college duties as well, either side of it, you know.
Yeah, it was a really difficult job you took on there, Jamie, because, like, I mean, Mary Eye have a good team, but at the same time, nothing other than a Fitzgibbon Cup win was going to be a success for you.
Maybe so. Look, I suppose we had a very decent team, you know. But I suppose, like, we lost 9 starters from last year's team, you know.
Right.
Which maybe is something that people weren't aware of. You know, we lost 9 of our starters from last year's team, including, you know, like, including the likes of Seamus Kennedy, Tom Stapleton, Declan Hannan, Niall O'Mara, you know, established inter-county players, you know.
Yeah, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, look, in that sense, the pressure was kind of off in that we had a lot of very, very good young fellas, but as of kind of maybe before this year, they weren't as well known, you know. So I suppose we knew ourselves that we had a strong group that were going to be capable of competing. But by the same token, we personally didn't feel like we were under any huge pressure. We said ourselves at the start of the year that, kind of the way the college scene even is in general, that, you know, getting to the weekend is a measure of success in itself, because when you get to a weekend, things take on a bit of a life of their own, you know. And we said, look, if we can get to a weekend and see what sort of shape we're in, have we picked up knocks by then, have we got away with it as such. And we were just lucky, I suppose, in the sense that we got away with it this year. You know, we carried more or less our whole panel except Sean Lennon, who was carrying a long-term injury. We carried our whole panel into a weekend and didn't really get hit with any injuries at all. So in that sense, we got the rub of the cream that, you know, some other weekend you could get hit with three or four injuries on a Friday and all of a sudden your whole thing collapses.
Yeah.
So I suppose we got the rub of the green. Like we said, look, getting to a weekend would be a huge measure of success in terms of consolidating the college's position as a strong hurling college, you know, because obviously, look, our history in the competition isn't exactly what you'd call a storied one until very recently, you know, the college being a kind of a female dominated college, you know, just the teaching profession being that way,
yeah,
is nice for the lads in some senses, we'll say, but in terms of putting out a hurling team, sometimes it can mitigate against you, you know. So like we said, look, if we could get to a weekend again, that would really consolidate the position, and then from there we just see what happened come the weekend, you know. So it was a difficult job, but by the same token, look, it was made incredibly easy by the kind of players we were working with and the guys we were working with, even more so than the players, you know.
Yeah, and what, like, I mean, you're an ex-player with Mary Eye, and you've played in a Sigerson for a Fitzgibbon Cup final. We talked to Brian Lohan recently and he had history of going to UL, so managing the team that you played with and the college that you've been to makes it all that much sweeter as well.
Big time, yeah, absolutely. Look, I would have said at the start of the year, even when it came that I was chatting to Joe and Kira about actually taking the job, that, you know, this wasn't just going to be a, like, you know, getting onto that circuit for me. Like, this was actually taking charge of my college, you know, my club, my college, my county. That was kind of my thing,
yeah.
You know. You know, my groups that meant something to me, rather than it just being a case of, you know, a career path as such. Like, you know, for me it was, you know, I actually, it mattered to me 1 week to the next whether Mary I won or not. Like, and it mattered to me for more than just my own reasons. It actually mattered to me for something much bigger. And that's the same for Brian Law. And, you know, it's the same for Davey Fitz with how long he's involved with LIT. You know, it's the same for these guys. You know, the guys that, you know, the guys, like the guys down in UCC, you know, just chatting to guys, some of the guys I'm friends with in UCC, you know, they'd always say, like, you know, that the UCC lad, they love UCC. And while, like, you know, for the rest of us, it's a case of, you know, you're like, God, they really love UCC. God, look, kind of roll in your eyes sometimes. But
yeah,
like, that's their, it's their club, you know. And for us, like, it was to try and to really kind of foster that feeling in the college. You know, it's something that has come in the last few number of years since we were kind of initially somewhat successful in 2013. You know, like, we had a lot of them guys from the 2013 team were either involved with us in terms of carrying water, carrying hurleys to get involved this year. And even some of them, you know, would join us in the celebration just because they were actually, it was like that kind of club feel to say, you know, Jesus, we finally won it. Like, you know, we finally won it again now. They're kind of, it had that kind of, you know, guys from before coming back because they love the place and they love the group and they love the, they actually wanted to see us succeed. Like, so in that sense, we just thought, you know, it is that small college kind of thing, you know, and that we'd have the advantage in terms of, that advantage that I would have or that Brian would have in terms of being a former student. In that, you know, we were like, this is our group, you know, and it meant something to us outside of everything else, you know.
Yeah, and I saw you saying after the game, you know, you commented on spirit goes a long way. And I think when you talk about third level education, you look at colleges like Jordanstown, who have incredible in the Sigerson talent every year, and other ones in Fitzgibbon as well. It's not always the talent that wins it. It's the manager that's able to create that club feel. And because students spend so much time together, if you get that right, you know, it can be a really close bond.
Big time, yeah. Look, college's GAA is entirely about, you know, it's entirely about creating a group, in my opinion. It's nearly more about creating a group than it is about anything else, because
yeah,
the quality is probably there for, it's actually nearly there for everyone, you know, like, everyone has a certain level of quality, so it's just a case then of, you don't get the same time that, in terms of on the field, that, you know, an inter-county team or a club would get, so it's creating that whole, that kind of, that group atmosphere, you know, like you said, and I suppose for us, in terms of the way we approached it, we kind of looked at trying to get them together as often as possible, but in such a way that it wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't be flogging, you know, you wouldn't be, you know, burning the candle at both ends. So if it was a case that we were training on a Tuesday and Thursday, like, that we'd have training would be 40, 50 minutes long, you know, something like that, instead of trying to run guys into the ground, and all of a sudden you have a county manager, kind of, they've got their plans and they're doing X amount there.
Yeah.
You know, like, these guys are doing so much that, you know, a little bit of common sense can go a long way in terms of, you know, there's no reason they can't actually get together and do 30 minutes of hurling, but you then have to tailor your sessions around the huge workload that a lot of these guys have.
Yeah.
But if you can do that, then you create a situation where these guys are in together a lot. And it makes, look, it makes a huge difference to the guys in your panel who are new and coming in and who are future county stars, to see the likes of Ronan or Cullum, you know, Ronan Maher or Cullum Galvin or Keane Lynch or Richie or these guys, to see these guys actually come in training and something, it makes a huge difference then to these guys who are starting out with, say, second years, guys like Aaron Gillan, you know, who are new to your group, like, and who are going to have a huge impact. But it makes a huge difference to these guys if they see the more, we'll say, established guys, you know, buying in, we'll say. So I suppose for us it was a case of creating a situation that lads were actually able to buy into, you know, because if you try and put on this big mad hectic schedule, then these guys, they're physically not going to be capable of doing it, because, you know, you're going to burn the light out and there's going to be nothing left for them, you know. So for us, that was our kind of motto from the start, you know, and look, like we've kind of said, like it seemed to work in our favour.
Yeah, I think you need to be easy going. What are you like on that whole politics side of it and dealing with the managers? Because Brian Lowen told me a story when we did a Fitzgibbon Cup preview about Davey being Clare manager and training Tony Kelly two nights before one of their Fitzgibbon Cup matches. So you probably need patience talking to all of these fellas and dealing with them.
I suppose you might to a certain extent. Now, in fairness, like I would have made contact with a member of each of the intercounty panel or intercounty backroom teams. You know, some of them managers like John Kiley, Donald Maloney, Mike Ryan in Tip, and I would have spoke to Noel Larkin in Galway, and Pat Ryan in Cork. And I found all of them very, very kind of very pleasant to deal with, and generally speaking, very, very kind of, what's the word, accommodating, you know.
Yeah.
But I suppose from that sense too, you know, I would have been very straight up with them and told them the same thing I've just told you in terms of what we were actually looking for from the lads. So at least we knew, look, when we'd ask Michael Ryan to say, listen, we want Ronan, Stephen and Alan for training, he knew what training meant.
Yeah,
you know,
you weren't going to kill them. Yeah,
he knew that Ronan isn't going to be coming back with his hamstring hanging out of his leg tomorrow.
Yeah.
Night, you know. And the same with all the lads, you know. I've just taken Michael as an example because they won the All-Ireland, you know. Like, they knew, I would have had a saying that I said to a few of them that, you know, we're not going to try and fatten the pig the night before the mark. Like, that's not our style, you know. We were kind of trying to get short, snappy things in together, get a group in together, work on maybe one or two small facets of play and nothing else, you know. And that was our motto. So I suppose it was just a case of having those lines of communication open, like. And I suppose, yeah, you do need patience, because it's the kind of we'll say situation where, look, as a college's manager, you have to seed right away, we'll say, to the intercounty manager, you know, because, you know, it's just kind of, that's just the natural order of things. But I think, you know, in terms of if you can communicate, and like you said, you know, that kind of politics side of it, those phone calls, you know, that communication side of it. But I think by and large, if you're pleasant and if you are willing to bend a small bit, they'll bend a small bit and nobody breaks, you know.
Yeah, just sensible stuff, I suppose, really. How would you describe your style of management, Jamie? Like, I mean, in the context of, I'd see Davy Fitzgerald, for example, as being a tactical manager, more of the modern style, and maybe Brian Cody as being more of a traditional kind of manager. You know, where do you fit in between those two?
I like to think I have my own way, I suppose. I think one of our things was, you know, we myself and Cormac McGrath, our coach, and Denis Ferncombe, one of our selectors, and Gavin, like, we would have done an awful lot of work preparing ourselves for the other team, and, you know, tried to break it down then into a smaller preparation for the lads, like, I suppose. So that homework side of it, and that, you know, preparation side of it, that tactical side of it, was something that obviously, you know, these days, I think you're at nothing really without.
Yeah.
You know, so I suppose that sense, I suppose, but for me personally, like, look, that's a huge part, obviously, of my own style of management and our style of coaching, is kind of, you know, that kind of game-centred kind of approach and what we need for our next game. But I suppose one of the big things I found, and maybe it's a case with, like, I think it's a case with all teams, you know, whether it's county, club or college, but probably for college, maybe more so than anything else, I think that holistic side of management is probably more important than anything else. You're dealing with 21-year-olds who are kind of finding their way in the world, you know. You're dealing with guys who, they might have girl troubles one week, they might have,
yeah,
you know, troubles with their studies another week, they might have, you know, they're trying to balance passing their exams, they're trying to balance playing with their counties, which is, you know, which makes, like there's no point beating around the bush. It's a four nights of the week commitment nearly to guys, and that makes a huge dent in their studies and their prospects study-wise. So you're dealing with that side of it. It makes a huge dent in their social lives, which is a huge part of them growing up to actually be well-rounded people, you know. So I suppose that side of just actually, you know what, just dealing with these young fellas on an individual basis and trying to free them up to actually play hurling and enjoy each other and enjoy their lives, you know, in college and make this an enjoyable part of their life instead of another stress. I suppose that was probably, for me, was a huge part of this job. And I thought, you know, if guys see that, you know what, the results obviously is very important and the management side of it, that's all hugely important and makes a huge difference. But if guys can see that, you know what, this guy actually, he gives a shit about me outside of everything else. I'm sorry for cursing now, but
yeah, no,
he gives a toss about me aside from anything else. You know, I think that makes a huge difference to lads in terms of their happiness and their willingness to work and in terms of their productivity then after, you know.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference. Like, that's, you're talking an awful lot of sense there, in fairness. Have you got the bug now for management, Jamie? Like, I mean, what are we going to see from you in the future?
To be honest, I don't know, Colm. Like, look, like I said a second ago, you know, I wanted to do this job just on its own merits, and it was never about getting into management as such. It was just a case of, I thought this was something that I thought I could do well. It was something I thought I really wanted to do.
Did you really enjoy it?
I went and did it, and I massively enjoyed it. Like, you know, I massively enjoyed it. Like, I have to say, it was a thing that just really from the get-go, you know, from our first training session last September, just found, you know what, I'm really, really enjoying this. Like, and I suppose I'm a small bit at a loose end now that it's done. But
yeah, because so much time went into it.
Big time, yeah. But look, in terms of future management, that side of things, I would say I'm an open book. You know, I said to everyone all along that, you know, people would ask you questions like, you know, I suppose you'd often hear yourself, look, you hear everyone has to give this certain soundbite to all questions, and it's like, you know, you kind of get bored of it and you say, God, will you ever just tell the truth? Like, so when people say to me, you know, have you ambitions or managing this, or have you ever thought about managing Cork to this, or have you ever thought about managing a county to this, like, it's only a liar would say no.
Yeah.
Obviously, look, you have so many hours in the day where you're bored and you're, you know, daydreaming, where you obviously at some point your mind drifts to these points. So, like, there's no point saying that these thoughts don't cross your mind. But look, I've often always countenanced that by saying, I don't know where I'll be in a few years. You know, like, I could be 5 years down the line, I could say, that's enough of that now. Christ almighty, I've never done that again. Or you could say, Jesus, I really love this. I want to do this forevermore. You know, I suppose I haven't really set any kind of, we'll say, targets or goals or any of that stuff in terms of management. I just want to actually just do jobs that I actually enjoy, you know, and take them on their own merits, like this one, because I think if that's the way you approach things, then at the very least, you know, you're going to give the thing you're actually doing a fair shot at doing it the right way, you know. So rather than setting these targets, I suppose, that as a player, you know yourself, like, I would have played minor 21, you know, so I would have always had this kind of trajectory that, you know yourself, like, by 23 I need to be on the county team, by 24, 25 I need to be starting and kind of a regular player, by 27 I want to have won a Munster or Leinster title, I want to have won an All-Ireland, I want to have this, that. And if you weren't on that path, you were beating yourself up saying, why am I not here at this age in my career? It's not lining up to where it should be.
Yeah.
Whereas with the management, I've kind of just said, you know what, I have a much healthier way of looking at it. There's a lot longer, I suppose, as well. There isn't the same shelf life that there is in terms of when you're a player, you know. But I've just decided, you know, look, the management, I'm just going to take this on its own merits. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now. I'm not going to look beyond it, you know. And if something comes, if an opportunity comes along in the future that I say, you know what, I'd enjoy that, then if my own situation was to allow it, then you'd say, yeah, let's do it. But if you were like, you know what, I don't think I'd enjoy that, then why do it? Like, you know, realistically.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point, you know, you do things that motivate you, and do things that kind of that fulfill you. Like, you know, this fulfilled me going forward, as long as certain things look like, you know what, I'd enjoy that, I'll try that, I'll do that, I think I could do a good job of that, then that's kind of the way I would be taking management in the future, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned you have a lot of time on your hands now, because I was going to ask you about that, if you're back working. I know you're a qualified teacher, you know, how's life in general?
I suppose not too bad. Look, I suppose, like, for anyone who's not aware, obviously my own story was that,
yeah,
that I got injured a few years ago and stuff. So I suppose I had done a lot of rehabilitation before taking on this job, and I was kind of a small bit, I suppose, not sick of it, but I was a small bit kind of just tired from it even. So I suppose, like, that side of my life has kind of maybe taken, well, I've kept up with it a small bit, it's maybe taken a backseat for the last while. So I think the first thing I want to do is I want to try and get back over to Cambridge to a rehabilitation spot for a month or two, where, you know, I'll actually just get back into slightly better shape. I can feel myself getting a bit soft, you know. So, you know, just that side of it. I think I'll take just a month or two to kind of turn the brain off and go back to the physical side of things, whereas up until this started, it was all physical, and there was, you know, I hadn't been challenging the mind too well. Like, so I suppose I always knew that when this was over, that I would be after going back that way. But I think I kind of needed it mentally. I needed the break. So I suppose going forward now, it's going to be a case of, you know, maybe getting back into that side of my life, and for a month or two, trying to get into slightly better shape, and, you know, going forward and looking at potential clinical trials kind of for my own kind of situation on a personal note, but hopefully being able to balance that side of my life with, you know, please God, being able to be involved with Mary Eigen next year.
Yeah, I wasn't going to actually ask you to explain what happened, because this is a hurling podcast, so I'm pretty sure most of our listeners will be on top, or all of our listeners will be on top of what happened to you. Has there been any improvement since the initial, problem, Jamie? Like, have you seen any improvements?
Yeah, somewhat improvement, I suppose. Improvement to the point of almost just kind of maintaining more so than improving. You know, I suppose I'd be happy enough that I suppose, you know, nearly, what is this, it's June 2014, so nearly 2.5-3 years later, that in terms of muscle bulk in my legs, that I haven't deteriorated an awful lot, we'll say, by comparison to what I probably should have after 3 years. And a lot of that is down to the rehab and the work that I would have been doing with people, like. In terms of actual getting improvement, very, very marginal, you know. But the way I look at it is, very, very marginal is more than nothing at all. Like, and I suppose as long as this was, like, I would have said it to Jura on News Talk, and it would just be the way that I look at it in general. Like, you know, this is what's working for me in terms of mentally, in terms of everything else, and as long as it is what works for me, it's what I'm going to keep doing. You know, the day that I think, okay, look, it's been 6 or 7 years, or it's been whatever, maybe I'd be happier doing this, then I'll go do that, you know. So this is kind of this side of, you know, physical rehabilitation and hopefully getting involved in clinical trials and stuff is what I want to do right now. You know, I'm a young fella, I'm 24, I always say, look, I have no real responsibilities as such, you know. I don't have, you know, a family that I need to provide for or anything like that, so I can be selfish. So I figure, why not? You know, there's tons of other people who don't get to be selfish in situations like this, and they have to bite the bullet and make do and get back to the grindstone. You know, I'm lucky in the sense that by and large I've had a lot of support to do rehabilitation and that kind of stuff, so why not be selfish in that sense, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned clinical trials there. Like, I saw you in a written interview, you said that you'd given up playing sport ever again, you know, but the hope to walk again, is that still strong?
It's still there, I suppose. Look, you have to strong is probably a strong word, you know. It's still there. I think, you know, you don't know these days the kind of advances that can be made,
yeah,
over a short period of time. But look, realistically, I know myself that naturally now, you know, the recovery isn't going to happen without a kind of an outside stimulus, you know, without something to come. But I would be happy enough going forward that I've kept myself in pretty decent shape for potential trials. I suppose there's a lot of work going on in the background, in that world, you know. I know Mark Pollock there, the kind of, he would have been an adventure race kind of guy.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Look, a lot of people would have heard of Mark, like, you know. But Mark is doing a lot of work on kind of hopefully getting clinical trials set up, and they would actually possibly be based in Ireland. So that side of things, you know, is something that I'm constantly kind of just working away at in the background, you know, behind all this stuff, you know. So I suppose getting involved with them would even just give me that focus for a year or two, that I'd be able to say, this is what I'm doing now, I suppose. It's something that always kind of makes a big difference. I would have said in one or two interviews in the past, like, that the what's the plan question used to be the one that used to get me when I didn't have a plan, because it was like, oh God, I might, what am I going to say to this person now? Yeah. They're after putting their foot in it.
No one at 24 has a plan.
And you're like, Jesus, they meant nothing but good by the question, but you're like, what the hell am I going to say here? Like, but no, like, I suppose that is the plan now at the moment, you know, and I suppose that potentially would be kind of coming in the next six, seven months. So I suppose what would be a big thing for me now is to say, right, you've had your 5-6 months of a break from the physical side of things, you know, it's time to kind of kick back into gear there physically now, because you know, you need to get yourself into proper shape to make the most of an opportunity like this, if and when it comes along.
Yeah, are you playing anything? Do any of the wheelchair sports interest you?
I played a small bit. I would have played a bit of tennis. I was probably the one I was best at. And I suppose, like, look, I enjoyed that one the most. It's probably the one of them I'd watch as well. You know,
The tennis looks actually enjoyable. You know, you see some of the other ones and they're more disorganised, but the tennis actually, you know, looks like you could properly enjoy that one.
Big time, yeah. And the tennis was probably the one I enjoyed the most. I played a small bit of it in Belfast a few times. Oh, it's actually the one I'd watch. You know, the Wimbledon kind of. The tennis is actually, it's quite enjoyable to watch. I played a small bit of the basketball with Father Matthews and Cork, and the guys there were really, you know, they were really good guys, really welcoming, you know. And you know, Paul Ryan there with the IWA in Cork, he does a huge amount for sport down there, and he's a really good guy, a really good sportsman. He's a Ballygarvan GA clubman, you know, he's a real gentleman as well on top of it, like, and he would have never put any major pressure on me. But I suppose I was kind of at a point where I was playing the game and I was pulling out there on a Tuesday and a Thursday, and I was making excuses really late. Or I remember there were two or three games where I kind of would have rang 2 or 3 hours before the game to say, oh, I can't make it, I'm sick, or I'm this. And after a while, I was feeling like, Jesus, like, you're being incredibly dishonest here, and it's just time to pull the plug here. Like, I would have chatted to my father about it, and he said, you know, how did you feel when it was you? And I was kind of like, Jesus, yeah, because I'd be from a small enough club where numbers wouldn't be huge, and we'd be going down to training sometimes on a Tuesday and Thursday, and we'd have 12 or 13 at training, and you'd be there saying, like, oh, where's such and such, and someone would say, oh, he can't make it, he has this, and you're kind of saying, and like, you were feeling let down and stuff, and you were feeling like people are being dishonest. And then all of a sudden I was in a position where I was the person letting people down, and I was the one being dishonest, and I was kind of like, Jesus, look, do you know what, this isn't fair to the guys who this actually motivates and does something for. So I just said, look, right now in my life, it's not for me. That's not to say it won't be going forward. I said, but right now, you're doing absolutely nobody any good. You're least of all yourself, but you're doing absolutely no one any favours by being a half present there, you know, by coming and going, by pulling out. You're being dishonest to these guys. You're not being fair to them. You know, they actually want to be here. You're only half here. So I just said, look, for the sake of honesty, I just said to Paul one day, I said, look, my heart really isn't in it, like, and the bottom line, and he just said, absolutely, look, if your heart's not in it, there's absolutely no problem, like, and he said, it'll always be there for you going forward, like,
it's psychologically really the most important, the most difficult thing for you in that regard, to go from the level of sport you were playing to maybe getting your head around saying, this is, you know, I have to enjoy this rather than I want to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so, maybe, like, and like, look, that's not to say that I was above it or anything, because believe me, I wasn't. Like, I was.
But I was gone back to being first sub on or first sub off.
You know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that at all. It was very much the opposite. Like, it was just a case of, I suppose, you know, I had my sports and they did an awful lot for me. You know, they motivated me. They did something for me. I was trying to enjoy this game that just never did, you know, it never motivated me, it never got me going, it never did for me what my games did for me. And I just said, look, rugby's the same, like, look, if rugby was on outside my backyard, I'd probably pull the curtains out. I have no interest in it, like,
right.
So it's not a case of able-bodied versus not able-bodied. It was just a case of, you know what, for the sake of equality, like, equality is the right to not like something as to like it, you know.
Yeah.
Like I said, I just always use rugby as an example because it's such a popular sport in lots of Ireland. Loads of people love it, so fair enough. Like, you know, they love that sport. I don't. It does nothing for me. You know, there's tons of people hate soccer. I love soccer.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, do you know what? This is a sport that tons of people love and really enjoy. It's not for me at the moment. I don't enjoy it right now. So that's just treat it like any other sport.
That's sacrilege down in Munster, like, you know.
Depends what part of Munster you're in now. Probably here in Limerick, all right. Like, I live kind of only just a mile or two from Thomond, like. But, yeah, like I said, like, it's just a case of taste, you know. Like, there's tons of people into rowing, into running, into all these things, and they wouldn't, you know, if they got a ticket for Croke Park in September, or, well, August in the future, but if they got a ticket for Croke Park, they'd have no interest in it. Like, whereas for me, if you offer me a ticket to the Rugby World Cup final, I'd give it to someone else, like, you know. That's yeah. just the way the world is, like, and it'd be a very boring world if we were all into the same thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's true. Come here, listen, I've taken up too much of your time here. I was just writing down here in my notes, Jason Ryan is the youngest ever inter-county manager. What age was he? 32, I think, when he started managing. I'd say you've a long way to go to beat that record, but I'll be putting a few quid if some booking offices will allow a few odds on that.
Yeah, we could go away and Sean it. Start something up.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get some inside trading here, Jamie. Thanks very much for taking the call and all the best.
I'm calling, take care.
It's tough. But I won't tell lies. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell it. But again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man. But it's a long 6 years for us there. And we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was just through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid. And he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
All right, accumulators time, lads. Because the hurling one's really difficult to do accumulators because, let's be honest, there's only like three matches in Division 1, and like, let's be honest, Tipperary are strong favourites, Kilkenny are strong favourites, and Waterford are strong favourites, so we're going handicap betting just to mix it up a little bit. Damien's played it a little bit safer and he's gone for Tipperary, Waterford, Kilkenny, three very strong favourites, and he's gone for Galway minus 11 against Laois, which, to be honest, looks like a sensational bet. I don't think I'll be called a traitor for saying that. Three odds on, and then Galway, Damien.
I think Galway, there's going to be a big backlash in Galway over what happened the last day against Wexford. Anyone who was at the game, including myself, I couldn't believe that they'd lost a 9-point lead and got beaten, you know, and it was a huge shock. It was a huge shock. Disappointing. So at least now we're travelling all the way to Salt Hill, to Pearce Stadium, and I think there's going to be a big backlash, and I expect Laois to get a fair trouncing.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for that perception of Galway hurling that there can be a bit flaky at times. They'll throw away leads against Kilkenny for them to do it at home against Wexford.
It just comes down to as we, and it's not me that's just talking about it, but it all comes down to consistency. And look, we can say that about a good few other teams. Cork, we could say it about Dublin, we could say it about Limerick, you know, at times maybe about Clare, but it just comes down to consistency, and just the team needs to get to a level of performance and consistently produce that performance. But it just seemed to be like a lack of concentration on the day against Wexford, and being honest, it was brilliant for Wexford. Absolutely, there was great kind of scenes after the match. You'd know that it meant an awful lot to them, you know, but and it was brilliant. But, you know, it was great for hurling, I suppose, but yeah, it just seems like there was a lack of concentration and just disappointment. But I think there'll be a massive backlash now, and Laois are going to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, it's just frustrating because you have to calling out a few counties there, like, you know, like Clare, Dublin and these counties. But I see Galway on a higher level to them. Galway are knocking on the Kilkenny and Tipperary door and they're on their level. But you wouldn't see Tipperary and Kilkenny throwing away a 9-point lead against Wexford at home. Was it 9 or 6? I think it was 6 when Joe scored the penalty, or was it 9 when Joe scored the penalty? But anyway, throwing away a big lead. That's just like you talk about Limerick, they frustrate you, but Galway frustrate you in a different way, as in they'll get to one level, but you're just hoping them on to go up to the next step, and we're waiting for that to happen.
I agree. There's no arguing it. I agree. The Galway can compete with anyone. Galway, over the years, people used to say were the one team that could compete for Kilkenny and could beat Kilkenny on any given day. But the big thing is, Galway could beat Kilkenny today, and next thing they could play, for example, Limerick or Clare or Cork the following day and get beaten.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what frustrates the life of people, but frustrates the life more of the Galway people than anyone. And it all just comes down to consistency, and that's something that needs to be worked on and spoken about and built on. And as I said, there's more than just one team that can speak about, but look at Colin, you're 100% right. There's no defending the argument. They would frustrate the life out of you at times, definitely.
Yeah, okay. Mikey, what accumulator have you gone for here?
I have gone for Kerry plus 13 handicap. I've gone for Kilkenny minus 4 handicap, Offaly plus 13, and Tipperary minus 4.
Okay, so just remind us who all those teams are playing against.
I'm a Wexford man who doesn't believe that Wexford are going to beat Kerry by more than 13 points in Wexford Park.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's a good call.
I think Kilkenny are sitting bottom of Division 1A on a duck's egg of 0 points. They're welcoming Cork to Nolan Park. I can easily see them winning by more than 4 points against Cork. I just think they haven't become a terrible team overnight. They may not be hitting the heights of recent years, but they are not. They're not going to go 3 defeats in a row, I'm fairly confident. Offaly plus 13 against Limerick. Just maybe it's because I was watching Laoghaire Gael the other night, but I think Offaly, they're going to at least manage that, get away to Limerick. And then Tipperary minus 4. They look like the team to beat at this stage. They're home to Clare. I think that's not a bad bet either.
Against Clare, yeah, no, in fairness, like these ones, they're all hard to call when you pull in the handicaps. But an interesting one on Richie Hogan. I was on to Richie on Wednesday night to try and come on to the podcast, and he was in the Middle East with the army, and we talked a lot about Richie's form and stuff like that. And these are little things that you don't know. Like, he might not be training that hard, he might be away with the army. He's home tomorrow, so he'll be playing at the weekend, but what will he have done? You see, you never really know that at this time of the year with people's careers and what they're actually doing. So you talk about Richie not shooting the lights out, there's probably a lot of reasons for that. Right, well, I'm going for Kerry plus 13 against Wexford. I agree, I don't think Wexford are a team that's just going to destroy Kerry. That's down in Kerry as well, right?
No, that's in Wexford.
Are you sure?
90%, yeah.
It is in Wexford, yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm still going with it. Galway minus 11 against Laois. I think that's a banker. Galway will be angry, and Salt Hill's really hard to play in. And Clare plus 4, I'm going for with Tipperary. Clare beat them in the league last year, and I just think Clare will be fired up for this, because like we talked in the football podcast, Mayo playing Dublin, it's almost like Mayo have to beat Dublin. Clare, if they want to be, you know, serious this year, I think Clare will just go all out to win this and try to make a statement. So I think if you throw them 4 points on top of that, they're in a great position. Yeah, well, sure, that's it, lads. We haven't had any success with any accumulator in either hurling or football.
I'm going to win them both this week.
Yeah, the one thing about us is we keep coming back to the well. We're like the Mayo footballers. We just keep coming back. We're not going to get knocked back, and we're back enthusiastic again next week. And one day we will get up a big accumulator.
Absolutely, that's the spirit, Willie.
All right, we'll be back for a review show.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you.